Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
I'm doing really good, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. We've put out some stuff on our Patreon, everyone. If you're not out there listening to it, then I don't know what you're doing.
And let's clear something up. We've had some confusion. We have people saying, oh, I can't give you $200 a month or $400 a month. If you see a number on there, that's the total that's been contributed to our Patreon. Our Patreon only costs $2 to start. So if you only want to contribute $2 and get a premium episode, then do it. If you want to contribute more, you'll get more.
Patreon is a widely used crowdsourcing patron donation system. Just go look at other people's Patreon pages and you'll get the gist of it. So tonight's episode is Fort Stockton, Texas, November 10th, 1991 is when the event takes place. But we might start a little bit earlier before that. What are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about an arson fire. A fire broke out at the home of Bill Richardson, and he would die in that fire. His niece, Sonia Casey, would survive the fire, but would later be prosecuted for deliberately setting a fire to kill her uncle so that she could inherit his estate.
They'll say that he died from thermal burns, and they will say that she had strange statements and behavior right after the fire, and all of this made her look suspicious, and that's why they charged her.
Sonia Casey grew up in Fort Stockton, Texas, with her parents, Buster and Zaley Richardson. Sonia was a divorced mother of two by 1986. She moved in with her uncle slash stepfather. I say that because her uncle married her mother after her father died. But we don't have to go through their whole history.
But just understand that she did help out her husband, her son, and she was staying with her uncle because he had gone through cataract surgery. So she was helping him get through that. She was staying with him, taking care of him.
Yeah, she moved in with Bill in 1991, it was late September, early October. Now on November 2nd, which this is about a little over a month from the time that she moves in, a couple of fires break out at the home. At 3:17 a.m., police and fire departments receive a call about a fire at Bill Richardson's place. And according to the statement from Sonia, she woke up, headed down the hallway, and saw that the back door was open. And she looked over at the office door, which was closed, and saw smoke. And when she opened the door, she found a fire burning. And this sounds strange, but just about 3 hours later, there's a fire that breaks out in the storage room at the carport. When Bill is asked about this fire, he said he's afraid for his life. Both he and Sonia feel as though someone is deliberately setting fires to harm them.
Now, Bill is a smoker, but these two fires seem very deliberate and not a rogue cigarette flicked in the wrong place.
So the authorities take some statements and they say that they'll investigate these fires. But does it really feel like they're going to investigate them, Justin?
Well, the investigation was pending through her trial and through most of her sentencing and everything. So, yeah, I don't think these fires were ever investigated at all, but they're used against her later.
Kind of reminds me of that scene in The Big Lebowski when his car is stolen.
Oh, yeah.
And he's asking about his briefcase and his Credence tapes.
Yeah, they disregard him.
It's not a priority of the police department. I think there's enough evidence in this case to show that there wasn't a priority on this. Should there have been? I don't know.
I think so. I mean, what if they had died in one of these two fires that night? What if somebody had been injured? Any of the neighbors question? Any witnesses that might have seen somebody fleeing from the home? I mean, arson is a serious situation. Our Kansas City firefighters, we have multiple people spending the rest of their lives in prison for arson. So yeah, let's take it seriously, but they don't.
On November 10th, police and fire departments respond to a call, another call at Bill Richardson's house. There's another fire. This is at 6:30 a.m. And police officer Robert Curtis is first to arrive. And outside the house are Sonia Casey and a neighbor, Dois Clausen. Now, the neighbor had made the call because I guess Sonia was too distraught to make the call. And Sonia was injured because apparently she had tried punching through the home's picture window. See, when Officer Curtis got there, he checked the front door and it was locked. The neighbor said that Sonia had tried punching through the window, probably to get in, and she seemed very upset.
She was screaming that her uncle was inside the home and they needed to get him out. So the officer ends up kicking in the front door, right?
Yeah, he kicks in the front door and he attempts to crawl inside the house because there's a lot of smoke. Next thing he knows, Sonia is clambering over the top of him to get in.
She couldn't get back in the house because the door was locked. So once he kicked in the door, she was now able to get back into the house. So she goes in after him.
So he forcibly removes her, but that's not the last time she tries to get in. She makes another attempt and she gets a little violent, you might say. And so the officer escorts her to the neighbor's house.
And I think that the neighbor called because, as you'll hear, Sonia escaped out a window to get away from the fire and ran to the neighbor's house for help. So she didn't really have a chance to call 911 from the home, and you know, it's at her neighbor's house, so why wouldn't the neighbor call?
A couple of officers would locate Bill Richardson's body. They really felt like he was beyond help at that point. They could tell that he was deceased. All that was left to do was the fire chief gave an order to put out the fire with a mist so as to preserve the scene as best as they could.
Emergency services will take Sonia to the hospital because she's suffering from smoke inhalation. She's got soot and stuff all over, so they want to get her checked out. At this point, she's a little combative with the officers, and when they question her, when they try to get a picture taken of her, she's cussing at them and yelling at them. And the police officers will say that she's saying, "I will not say another word to you until I talk to my attorney." I wonder if her treatment by them, you know, made her behave this way, or if she felt they were turning suspicions on her, who knows, but she was being very aggressive towards the police officers and not cooperating with them any longer.
Well, they were asking for samples, blood samples, for testing. That would certainly indicate to her that she was a suspect, but they're investigating. Now, she's not very nice when she tells them that she's not going to provide these samples. And later on, after it seems as though there's a possibility that she might, by that time, the officers say that, oh, yes, she will provide samples, and they will get a court order to make sure that she does.
Many months pass, and by the next year, they'll end up indicting her and bringing charges against her for the death of Bill. She will insist on her innocence. She will say that it was an accident, it was a fire, and she makes another statement that that morning, she remembers Bill coming into her bedroom and saying the house is on fire, either tapping her on the shoulder or just verbally telling her and that she needs to get out and he's going to go back for the dog. So she gets out of bed, opens her window to her bedroom, exits the home, and Bill goes back in. Now, it was early in the morning and she was groggy and she claims that she might have had a few drinks the night before, so she might be hungover. It's early. She doesn't know if she's remembering this correctly. Now, the police will claim that she smelled of alcohol, and that will come up in trial later. But Bill, it's a little interesting, her statement and whether her statement adds up or not, if Bill had actually woke her up that morning. So once we get into the trial here, you'll understand why the prosecutor and the investigators felt her statement was contradictory, and it kind of makes her look suspect. Why do you think it makes her look suspect, Aaron?
Well, anytime you're trying to investigate and someone keeps throwing up profanity and asking for a lawyer, it seems suspicious. Because if you've lost a loved one in a fire, then you think you would want to help. But in this case, Sonia was not very cooperative. And by not very, I mean, I don't think she was cooperative at all.
And they say that if she escaped from her window and Bill went back into the house, it would have made sense that he would have escaped out like the front door. And instead, he went back to where the fire originated from, which would have been illogical.
It may not have been illogical. And this comes up at trial, but there was a hole in the ceiling. And underneath the hole was a trash can. I think it was a 30-gallon trash can, and it would collect the rainwater. So they believe that it's possible that he thought, oh, I can stop this fire. I mean, he doesn't want to lose his home. This is a 76-year-old man. He's lived there for more than 10 years, I believe. And he has all this rainwater right next to where the fire probably is, so he can just put it out. I think that's the theory anyway.
Yeah, but the prosecutors are saying, well, she had to have set the fire. This whole statement of him coming in and waking her up is all BS. She fabricated it. And he would have left the house the one route that wasn't on fire, pretty much. He would have either followed her out or gone out the front door. So therefore, he had to have been where the origin of the fire was. And then they claim that they see pooling of an accelerant around him, or pores of accelerant around him. He also had a aluminum cot that he slept on. And from the time that the fire was reported to the time that they showed up and put the fire out, the aluminum had melted. And they say that the fire chief and prosecutor will say, there's no way it could have melted that fast if an accelerant wasn't used.
In 1993, Sonia Casey will go to trial, and the prosecution gives their theory on what they believe happened. They state that Sonia Casey murdered her uncle by pouring an accelerant on him, possibly gasoline, and setting him on fire. And they say that she had had alcohol to give her liquid courage so that she could set the fires and kill her uncle. And a couple of police officers would testify that they
detected alcohol on her breath. This is actually a quote from the trial. Why would she be drinking liquor at that time of the morning except to build up enough courage to go in there and kill the man that loved her?
They said that she was trying to murder him to get an inheritance or to inherit the home.
Yes. When the place was searched, they ended up finding a handwritten will by Bill Richardson in one of her dresser drawers. And in Texas, this is known as a holographic will, and it's completely valid. In the will, he left all assets to his niece, Sonia J. Casey.
So she gets it all.
And yes, they did check the handwriting, and it matched Bill. And there was no concern from anyone as to whether this was legitimate or not. But for the state, this isn't a problem because that's the motive. Mm-hmm. She wants all of his money. And they went after her character. They said when the officers were outside the home, she scratched and struck at them. She was very combative. She was crying, but no one ever saw any tears. It was about 6:30 in the morning when the call came in, and none of the neighbors heard any dogs barking. If you recall before the fires from November 2nd, it was asserted that they must have been arson fires set by strangers, someone trying to harm Bill and his niece. They said without the dogs barking, where would the intruders be at? I mean, a dog would hear an intruder and bark.
Well, I get that because we bring it up in the Darley Rotier case where we're like, why didn't the dog alert? You know, so it looks like Sonia.
And of course, Sonia, since she was so combative, was not cooperative. She wanted an attorney. She didn't want to give a blood sample. In addition to this, her hair was singed, which according to the medical examiner at trial, was a direct result of being
close proximity of the fire.
They also said that Bill Richardson died of thermal burns. And according to the medical examiner, Dr. Robert Bucks, he had soot in his nose and mouth, which meant he was breathing at the time he died. And he had a low level of carbon monoxide. The way they describe it, Bill suffered. He died by being burned to death. He also had a red frothy liquid in his lungs. The state actually questions Bucks about this, and he states that different things could cause this. It could be heart failure or smoke. He really believed that it didn't challenge his finding of death by thermal burns, so it wasn't a concern. The defense, for some odd reason, doesn't challenge this. I think because they don't bring in an expert, so this opportunity is what I would call it, goes by with no challenge.
I mean, the defense will hire an expert to go do a walkthrough of the house, but it's almost a year later. So looking at this quote unquote crime scene a year later, what are you going to figure out from that? When the prosecution says there were signs of accelerant pores around the body, when the prosecution says that her hair was singed, when the prosecution levies all these allegations, her defense literally does not challenge any of it because they don't bring in their own experts. Or when they do, it's too late. Now, there's some evidence linking her and Bill, and it's tests that Joe Castorena, he's a chemist and a toxicologist who is testing the clothing from both Bill and Sonia, and he will testify that their clothing tested positive for accelerants or petroleum-based something or other, you know, so gasoline, turpentine, kerosene. So she had to have doused him with gasoline. This is very damning because why would he have gasoline on him? Why would she have gasoline on her? Why would the fire burn so hot, melt an aluminum cot? Why would she have singed hair? Why would she be so uncooperative with police? I mean, it looks pretty straightforward that she's very suspicious or she should be a suspect. So far with all this evidence we've laid out, it looks pretty bad for her, right?
Right, it does. And sadly, the defense, they really only go after Bill's history. And they describe his history as being a little careless with fire. I mean, he carries around a blowtorch so he can light cigarettes and start the furnace up and roast marshmallows. He tends to leave cigarettes burning places.
This is Texas, though. How else do you light your cigarette besides with a blowtorch?
So you can imagine she's not getting good representation here. Whatever you think about guilt or innocence at this point, there should at least be challenges made along the way. And it feels like the defense is just, I don't know, going out with a wiffle bat.
I mean, well, they're attacking the character of the victim. That's never going to get you off the hook. You have to attack the evidence that's being used against you.
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly, but I will say that when they establish the history of his carelessness with fire, I think they are showing how it's likely that he caused this fire, that you can't rule him out. But I know what you're saying. If that's all they're presenting, there might be some jury members looking at this and thinking, wow, nice, go after the dead guy.
Yeah, that's how I felt when you just read it. So, yeah.
So the verdict in this trial, guilty. They give her a sentence of 55 years in prison and hit her with a $10,000 fine.
Whoa.
On top of that, now she's going to prison for the murder of her uncle.
Her children are going to be motherless. Her family, who's she's been taking care of, are without a caretaker. Yeah.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
She appeals.
Well, she would get a retrial on the punishment phase. So she's not going to be in a position to get out of prison, I don't think. I mean, really what this is will she keep her 55 years? Will she get a reduction in sentence, or will she get more? At this trial, I feel like she's finally getting some good defense.
Defense. Yeah.
Included in this trial on her side is Gerald Hurst. He used to design explosives for the military, and he has become an arson expert. It seems to be a real passion of his. He uses the latest science to examine scenes that would normally have been considered arson. Using the latest science, he can determine if it actually was arson or not. For a long time, arson fires were determined by, I would say, gut instinct and experience.
Yeah, it was really the fireman and possibly a fire investigator and just observations. It was very straightforward. Just, it looks like somebody set this. it's kind of scary, actually, back. I mean, this is 1991, so, you know, when this happened.
And they do go after the evidence this time. Hearst talks about there was this chair that Bill would sit in all the time. It was a green chair. And inside this green chair were a bunch of old cigarette butts that he could clearly see had just been dropped in the chair lit. That's what they call a fire bug.
Yeah. And the chair had burn marks all over it. You know, the fabric was had, you know, been melted from all these lit cigarettes.
But really the important thing that Hearst goes after is the testing that showed that an accelerant had been found. Apparently, when they gathered up what was left of Bill's clothing, which wasn't much. I mean, he had like a waistband and he had some tattered remnants of his pants. But that's about it, right? I mean, most everything had burned up.
Yeah.
Some of it, well, possibly some of it had been kept in a glass jar. Now, the problem with this is a glass jar, a mason jar, has rubber in the lid of it. That can cause false positives. And
because rubber is made out of petroleum, that if they rub off, I mean, we're looking at microscopic residues in molecules to test for accelerant. So just rubbing rubber on this clothing could possibly contaminate it.
And accelerant will be left if it doesn't get all burned up or if all the oxygen in the room burns up before the accelerant is used up, or if there's just an abundance of accelerant. And some arsonists will use way too much accelerant and leave evidence behind. Now, this glass jar, Joe Castorena, this chemist, was testing, and he says he found accelerant. During this resentencing trial, this is the first time in my reading where I just became disgusted. They show that everyone who tested samples, they came up negative for accelerant. Only Joe Castorena found any evidence of an accelerant.
There was 10 other people testing. It was 9 or 10. I could be wrong. But all of them negative. It's either positive or it's negative. I mean, it's like a pregnancy test here. There's no in between. There's no amount. It's either yes or no. Up to 10 people say no, but Joe says yes. How can 10 people be wrong?
Even his boss tested samples. And they came back negative. Hearst would go on to talk about how false positives happen, including the elastic from Bill's waistband could give false positives because of what it's made of. He testified that clothing remnants in the glass jar were fake. They were fraudulent. He seemed very convinced that they were just planted. I think that's a bold statement.
They weren't even clothes from Bill. They were just other clothing that Joe had thrown in a jar.
Now, Joe Castorena, despite all the other tests saying there was no accelerant, stuck by his own findings. And that's even after he admitted that the lab was contaminated. He admitted that the lab was contaminated. And when questioned about that, he said, well, no one asked me.
He doubles down so much. One, he says nobody asks him. So, okay, so somebody else might have urinated on this pregnancy test, but I'm not going to say anything when it comes up positive. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. He says that the cross-contamination or the contamination of his evidence could have caused false negatives. Okay, so wrap your head around that. He's saying that if there was gasoline on a piece of fabric or clothing, it being contaminated with something else could cancel out the gasoline. Gasoline is either present or it's not present. So a false negative, the way he's explaining it, I personally have a big issue with. I don't see how you get a false negative. I can see how you can get a false positive, but a negative means it's not present. So I don't see how it can be contaminated with something else unless you doused it with bleach and then got rid of the contaminations. But he doesn't say that. But then again, no one asked him.
He also says that by his testing, that the gasoline may have been removed. You know, whatever accelerant might have been there had been removed because he had already run tests. And Hearst went after that and said, that's impossible because the AID lab didn't get the same samples he did.
So Joe was saying the tests I ran could have cleansed the the accelerant from this fabric, so that's why you're getting a negative result. Gerald says, no, we had a different sample, not yours. So we're catching him in a lie. Joe is lying.
And it's amazing because Hurst points this out. He says, if you store clothing that may not have had accelerant in a mason jar, you can get a false positive because of the rubber in the lid. Another lab technician actually says that if you check, there are peaks that you look at, and the peaks in the samples found in the clothing and the peaks from actual gasoline or accelerant did not match at all. So even if he thought he had something, all he had to do is look at the peaks and he would see that they don't match. It's just like the DNA. You know, it has to meet certain criteria or you can't say that it's a match. And in this case, Joe Castorena, despite all scientific testing methods, decides to, as Justin says, double down or even triple down, it seems, and state that he definitely found accelerant.
Think about that. This is the one key link, the smoking gun, the whatever you wanted, the ace in the hole for the prosecutors, linking malice intent to her. And it was not real. It was not true. That's what got her convicted.
Fire investigator Ken Gibson testified, and using all of the collected evidence from the 1993 trial, he said, if you look over all of the pictures that were taken and you look over the scene as it was, they don't describe the scene correctly during the 1993 trial. And one of the things he pointed out was in the 93 trial, they tried saying that the charring was the worst at the exposed rafters that were above Bill. But he said, if you look at the evidence, the worst charring was actually near the window, which is evidence that the fire started near the cot.
They also had other witnesses who testified that, including the neighbor and some of the nurses, that she did not smell of alcohol that morning. They did not detect that she was drunk. Yet that was a main piece of the prosecutor's case, was she built up this courage with alcohol to commit this crime. But the only people that seemed to back this story up are the two police officers that she was being combative against. But none of the nurses or neighbor testified to this. But the prosecutor in his opening statement says the nurses will testify to this, and they won't.
Dr. James Casey testifies and said that the red, frothy substance in the lungs of Bill Richardson was likely from sudden heart failure. He said that there was no evidence of cooking of the inner organs. And he explained that the soot found in the nose and mouth was normal, because if you've had a heart attack, you might take short breaths for a bit, you know, prior to your heart stopping. And he said, you can't die. And this is something that really stood out to me. He said, you can't die from thermal burns and then have a heart attack.
So wait, he's saying that Bill died from a heart attack and not a fire at all. So the entire prosecution's theory that he was burned to death just deemed false. This does seem a little suspect to me, because I think back to Sonia's statement that morning that Bill had come in and told her the house was on fire and that she needed to leave. Now I think that she dreamed this, or it never happened, because Bill might have been having a heart attack while smoking a cigarette.
He also was able to show that Bill showed signs of coronary heart disease. Now the state questions him and wants to know, how is it possible that Bill is burned so badly if he didn't die of thermal burns? You know, how can you explain what happened to his body? Because bodies aren't that easy to burn. Throughout this investigation by those that are looking for errors in the 1993 trial, it's been suggested that curtains may have fallen on Bill and caused him to burn for a longer time. Apparently, on November 2nd, his dryer had gotten damaged in the fire, and so he was hanging up a lot of clothes around in that room
to dry. Yeah.
You know, to dry them out. And if a curtain fell on him, it would certainly cause a fire to keep burning on his body and would certainly destroy him. Now, the state definitely does not believe that a curtain fell on him, but it seems like, well, there are experts testifying that it very well could have happened. So this is a resentencing trial.
They did a Hail Mary on innocence.
It seemed like, it really seems like if you go through the trial, the way that the court documents show it, it seems like they made a very good case as to why Sonia should not be sentenced to more prison time. But the verdict comes back 99 years. So she got 44 more years over what she got in the first trial. We have to ask why. How is that possible?
Yeah.
The best I can guess, it's almost as though the juries weren't ready to digest this debate on the evidence. And in the end, went with who they trusted. And I think they trusted the police officers and the firefighters and fire investigators who were on the state's side. That's how they made their decision.
She'd already been found guilty once. They thought this was a simple issue of how many years do we need to give her? I mean, she's already been found guilty, so we're not really trying to figure out guilt or innocence here. We're trying to figure out how much punishment to administer. So they didn't listen to any of this evidence. So she went from 50-something years to 99 years. That's what she gets for trying.
Now, I think one of the things that really drives her innocence campaign, for those that didn't personally know her but got involved anyway, was the fact that this is something that was really troubling to people who had studied arson fires and were working with the latest science about how to determine if an accelerant was really used, how to tell if a fire was deliberate. And they were seeing all kinds of red flags here, and knowing that people were either being incarcerated or put to death for fire-related deaths or murders, as they were called during the trials, this troubled them. They didn't like this idea that people were having to suffer because of a lack of understanding of the science of this, or, you know, being judged because, oh, there was a will. She stood to inherit an estate. Of course she looks guilty. That's something that didn't sit right with a lot of people, and they got involved.
Her conviction was upheld for many years, but on July 4th, 1998, Sonia will request parole from the Texas Board of Pardons, and in November of 1998, they will grant her parole and release her, which is sort of interesting. There wasn't really, I mean, there was a lot of public support for her, but they let her out on a 99-year sentence, but they didn't say she was innocent. They just said, okay, we're going to release you from prison because we don't deem you a danger to society. She gets out, but she's still a guilty, you know, ex-convict.
And it just seems crazy because they're saying that she murdered her uncle for money, and she gets 99 years, but yeah, let's let her out a couple of years since the retrial.
Yeah.
I mean, what are they really saying here? It's as though they want it both ways. We want the conviction. We want you to look bad, but then we don't need to keep you in prison. It's okay. We'll let you out.
And let me take another point of contention here with this whole motive. She was killing her uncle to inherit the house that was burned down. I mean, like, did no one else think of that? Like, that would be the worst way to kill somebody, because you're literally burning up the property that you're seeking. I mean, I don't know. Some people are dumb and they might do that, but that never was countered by the defense. It just seems weird.
Well, of course, it comes out that she used up whatever money that she had received from Bill and then had to pay out more money of her own. Well, because of this fire.
Yeah, she had legal fees. She was fined $10,000. I mean, yeah, she's going to be broke.
One thing that came out about Sonia was, for a while when she was younger, she was calling Bill Richardson daddy. Now, remember, Bill Richardson was her dad's brother. her biological dad's brother, and she was calling him daddy for a while until her dad caught wind of it and she felt bad. So she stopped calling Bill dad. She very much, from what everyone has said that knew her, that she loved Bill Richardson and he was very much her father.
Yeah. So even if he was considered her uncle and then her stepfather, it was always her father or her second father. She is afraid to seek actual innocence. She's afraid to go back into a courtroom and go for an exoneration because she feels that they could just resentence her and send her back to prison. She doesn't trust the system to fix her problem. I get her frustrations. I get her fear. But she's older now. She's not doing well health-wise. And she's lost a big chunk of her life. Her children need help. So attorneys and innocence projects are working with her to seek actual innocence so then she can turn around and get compensation for this wrongful conviction.
And she is in Texas.
Yeah.
Which I know there might be some of you out there saying, hey, don't pick on my state. Look, we love Texas. I've been down there a number of times. But when it comes to the legal system down there, some of the worst cases I've ever seen have come from Texas.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. But time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/genY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/genY.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/GenY. That's storyworth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
I mean, this is a prime example that bad junk science was used in trial. And if it's not challenged by the defense, then it gets in. It's like the Kerry Max Cook one. They dated a fingerprint and said the fingerprint was laid on a door at the exact time of the murder. You can't do that. But if you don't challenge it, if you don't object, or if the judge doesn't allow you to object to it, you can say pigs fly. And if it goes in, it goes in. And the jury now has to determine your guilt if you were riding on a flying pig when you committed the murder. And that's acceptable, regardless of reality. And here we have a case where they have fabricated results that are what got the conviction of this, what I think is an innocent woman.
One of the really telling moments in this whole fiasco is a man who worked at the county toxicology lab where Joe Castorena worked had gone to the people that run the lab and said, hey, I'm seeing a lot of crap coming through here. a lot of tests that weren't run properly or people just making up results. And they ended up firing him.
So the whistleblower who's reporting that there's a problem and that they're fabricating evidence against innocent people or tainting the evidence is let go? Is that what you're saying here?
Yeah, his name is Dr. Larry Atuarte. And they turned around and said they were firing him because he had falsified lab results. But see, this backfires on them because he had meticulously documented everything he had done. And so when it came time to show the cards, they had zero chance of any success fighting this guy. And they had to settle for $350,000 and give him his job back. Although he quit the next day. I mean, he wasn't staying there. Yeah, that's for sure.
He filed the wrongful termination suit and he won with flying colors. You don't mess with a type A.
Yeah. Rod Ponton, who was district attorney at the time, he said that despite the problem of not having an accelerant proven to be on the scene, he said that there's other evidence that he's using to suggest that she did set the fire. And he says that there were no fires at that house until Sonia moved in. So that's over 10 years of no fires. And he said the singed hair that she had shows that she probably set the fire.
Yet before she moved in, I don't think Bill would have reported any fires because he apparently had lots of fires. Secondly, we've already mentioned that when the first police officer showed up, he kicked in the front door and Sonia went in after him. So she was around fire multiple times, either when she was escaping from the house or when she followed the other police officer into the house, into the fire. So I'm not really sure why this singed hair is such a suspect item that they like to point out.
Well, he has other evidence he brings up, but it's pretty lame in my opinion. One of the points he makes is that why is she trying to punch through a window when she could have just gone back through the window she escaped from? There wasn't, according to him, there wasn't very much smoke or heat damage in her room. So why didn't she just go back in there? Ponton doesn't care about the truth, I would say. He loses his own primary to a young, inexperienced guy. And I think it's because people didn't like him. If you look at the way he handles this case, he doesn't care about evidence. He cares about his gut instinct. And for him, that's all that mattered. I'd say if we want to talk about the good things that come out of this case, it's that the people seem to know when they were dealing with someone who was full of it. And Ponton seemed to be full of it.
The way they investigate fires changes because, you know, when you put out the hint, you know, your Tuesday clue day, a lot of people talked about another case. They guessed another Texas case where a man was charged and convicted of arson, killing his family, and he was sentenced to death.
You're talking about Cameron Todd Willingham.
Yeah. We could have a man that was executed who was innocent in Texas, Sonia, who could have spent the rest of her life behind bars because of this BS junk science that they were using.
Yeah, so if there were any cases that predated this 2005 state law that allows a forensic commission to evaluate claims of convictions based on junk science, well, heck, you know, we're not going to go back and look at anything prior to 2005. And this is where they're putting finances and they're putting laziness ahead of the truth and of protecting the public. Because if you have someone who's been wrongly convicted and yet, oh, we can't go back another year or two to investigate their case, that's wrong. I mean, what would you say to that, Justin? I mean, they're just willing to say, who cares if they're innocent? We'll take care of everyone from here on out.
Yeah, it's a retroactive with a deadline. I don't get that. When we were talking about the other tech who was pretty much the whistleblower saying these other people aren't doing their jobs correctly. I take pride in the work I do and I beat myself up when I make mistakes. And nobody's life is on the line when I do a podcast or when I fix a computer. So to see the complete disregard from these lab techs, from these prosecutors who are involved with this, and they just disregard it and double down on whatever their original finding was. It is disgusting. And I wish I could try to give something positive here, but I feel that this is showing me that they absolutely can plant evidence, fabricate evidence. And now when I look at other murderers and rapists who I absolutely think are guilty, I think, well, should I start taking their side? Is the system that corrupt where I start saying, let them all walk, because if you can't do this correctly, then how are we supposed to believe you on these other cases? And unlike Batman, where, you know, when Two-Face is exposed and Batman says, well, we can't do that because it'll reverse all the criminals that he's put in prison. No, that doesn't happen. You can show that a prosecutor is completely corrupt. They won't do anything about his prior convictions. They don't have to. And in this case, we see that, oh, we'll go back to this certain date and reinvestigate, but we don't really have the funds to go back any further than that. So, hey, if you did it in 2004, well, sorry about it.
So in 2010, Innocence Project of Texas gets the ball rolling on trying to get her exonerated because, well, we've gone through it. There is no evidence at all that Sonia Casey set the fire that the state claims took the life of her uncle, Bill Richardson.
During this, the state will still come back and we will have a couple dissenting judges who will say, no, she doesn't deserve actual innocence. She doesn't deserve compensation. They will question in their dissenting opinions all the evidence against her. They will even make statements regarding her original trial saying, yeah, if all these things had come to light, she wouldn't have been found guilty. But because she was already found guilty, the burden of proof to find her actually innocent is much greater than it is in the initial trial. So they still dissented, but the majority actually found her actually innocent and they cleared her. Holy crap. They are seeking compensation, $80,000 for every year she spent behind bars, and another $25,000 a year for each year she was on parole, plus the state would cover her health insurance. She's got actual innocence. She has been totally exonerated, and the Texas Innocence Project got her that. But she's destitute. She's in terrible health. So now they're going for the compensation, and that would help her immensely and help her family out immensely, who have suffered greatly from this. But I don't know if she's going to be around long enough to enjoy this. And that's the really sad part. She's in her late 60s in poor health. A lot of her family members have been in poor health. So she's had a hard life, and for them to be coming around with this compensation now seems a little late to me, but I'm glad it looks like she's going to get it.
I think in closing, we should kind of go over what's really wrong with all of this. I mean, on one hand, you can always say if someone is wrongly convicted, it's a terrible thing because they get sent to prison. Their reputation is destroyed. They have the death of a loved one placed at their feet. They're responsible. But beyond that, you had a lab that supposedly was contaminated. And this is something that Joe Castorena admitted to a number of times. The really disturbing part is they went after him on this. He was questioned about this. Well, did you ever tell anybody? And he said, no, no one ever asked. Then later on, he goes on to say that they discovered what the problem was and they fixed it. And they want to know who he was talking about, you know, because he kept saying we, and he was referring to another man that worked there, a guy by the name of Robert Rodriguez. Here's the problem with that is you would think that in a lab, if you have some contamination, and in this case, they had, well, according to Joe Castorena, they had two different types of contamination going on. You'd think that they would take it to their superiors and say, look, we've got contamination, let's fix this. But according to Joe, they took care of it. Does that make you feel better?
Yeah. I mean, Joe, the guy that's being accused of all the contamination, says he took care of it. Why wouldn't he have, right?
Larry Atuarte, we talked about him earlier, and he's the one that has really come out and spoken out about this so-called contamination at the lab. And I think it's important because they tried shutting him down. They tried making it to where he couldn't talk about this. And since he was so well documented and he was so solid in his claims, they couldn't shut him down and they couldn't shut him up. And so he's been out there and he's talked quite a bit about this stuff. And he's not coming out and saying that the contamination was deliberate, but he's saying it's possible. Ooh. And I think that's a scary thought that people would contaminate samples to get the results they want.
We covered that in a premium episode where Annie Dukin premium episode. Go check it out. It was drug tests. It was all kinds of criminal tests that she was running. And she pretty much working with the prosecutor to get these convictions and they would come to her. In this case, he's saying that the contamination was prevalent. He was a whistleblower and they tried to shut him up. They terminated him and they tried to give him tried to stick him with a gag order. Why would they do that? Just think about that. Nobody wants to error correct. Nobody wants to take accountability. It's status quo or nothing. I think we have room for improvement. And that's all he was trying to do.
But I will say, I think if you look, even though it took a while in this case, the fact that she was exonerated gives you hope that even in Texas, where we have a lot of examples of bad results and poor investigations and questionable trials, I think maybe we're turning a corner. You know, the fact that we can turn this around, even if it took a while, they were able to turn it around and Sonia was able to get her reputation back. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.